Pasar. Well, y'all gonna get a load today, aren't you? I'm not. I want to say again, I'm not really accustomed to getting up behind people that have as much talent as you have in this congregation here. It's an incredible thing. Our Bible class this morning, I very much, very deeply appreciate the Bible class teachers that you have here. One of my good friends, I was talking to him the other day, and he was asking me what I was teaching, and I said, "Well, I'm not." And he said, "Well, what have you taught since you've been there?" I said, "I haven't." And he said, "Well, I didn't think you would like that." I said, "You don't understand. I'm learning, and I am. And all of our teachers and our classes, I have certainly enjoyed sitting at their feet." We are discussing something that renders Christians, many Christians, very powerless, and that is doubt. And I'll kind of pick through and go to this next one that I want us to look at. Doubt is not innately bad. We talked about that in our first lesson. It is to be suspended between belief and unbelief. And anyone that has faith has to work through doubt. We all do. We all have. And very likely, in most cases, we all still are to some degree or other. There are things that when we get to the peripheral edge of our faith, we have questions. Those questions sometimes result in doubt on our part. And doubt makes us investigate to find out for ourselves. The only problem with doubt is if we mishandle it or if it goes unaddressed. And then in those cases, doubt becomes a real problem. We talked about last week, the first reason for doubt is ingratitude. And I will just say, by way of reminder about that, that I tend to call this kind of doubt designer doubt. It is doubt that serves a purpose for the person who exhibits that kind of doubt. In other words, there comes a time in our lives that we're called on to pay some price for being a Christian. It may be embarrassment. It may be some cost that we just don't particularly want to pay. And if we have allowed ingratitude to come into our life and we are not we don't have fresh on our hearts and on our minds what Christ has done for us, then we begin to kind of conveniently question, "I don't know if I really want to pay this price or not. I don't know if maybe I made a wrong decision to start with. I'm not sure that this is worth this cost." And so we have a tendency to manufacture doubts. And so maybe this first level of doubt that we talked about last week are not actually, not truly doubts. I don't know if I can say that or not. I don't know if that's true or not. I would say as I look at your doubts, if they fall in that category, then I would say that. If I felt them, I might not say that. You with me? You understand what I'm saying? Feelings are feelings, regardless of how significant somebody else may deem to be or legitimate someone else may think they are. But when we forget about what God's done for us and we're called on to pay a price, and sometimes I will just say that doubt comes in conveniently so that we decide we don't have to pay that price. And so one level of doubt or one source of doubt comes from ingratitude. And it doesn't hurt anything if we can make those doubts appear intellectual. Second source of doubt is from an improper view of God. Let me illustrate it this way. And for those of you, I'm harking back a few years here, but for those of you who don't know it, Paul Harvey was on radio a long, long time before he was on TV. And we heard that deep Paul Harvey voice for a long, long time before any of us ever saw him. And then when the day came that I saw Paul Harvey, I was disappointed. Because in my mind, over those years, I had conjured up this picture of Paul Harvey. And I don't mean to be derogatory about him. I guess if he were here, he would be insulted about that. Because if somebody said that about me, I would be. But I can remember a really sharp disappointment when I saw Paul Harvey, because the man didn't match his voice in my mind. And then it dawned on me that wasn't his problem. That was my problem. And there were actually, I had formed a picture about him from his radio program, and I realized that my picture and he, if it's the proper way to say that, were two different, totally different things. It wasn't his fault that he didn't measure up to what I thought he should look like. And he didn't have to measure up to what I thought he should look like, and it didn't detract from him at all and his ability that he didn't measure up to what I look like, except to me. And for a while, I didn't want to hear him anymore, because I was just disappointed. And, you know, I know that's foolish, but I think that can blend over into our religious feeling about God and our relationship to God if we're not really careful. Because, you see, we all have a picture of God, and it's really, really, really important that we have an accurate picture of God. Because I think it's very possible for people to be disappointed in God. And somebody said, well, I don't think you can expect more of God than God will deliver. I think you can. I think you can decide that God has promised certain things that God never has promised, and whenever they don't happen in your life, then you're disappointed. And it creates problems for you in your life. And so doubts come as a result of that. Sometimes because of misteaching, sometimes because of a lack of teaching, a believer gets a false idea about God, and that hinders our ability to trust Him or to love Him. And whenever things don't happen the way that we persuaded ourselves that God said they would happen, when He never in fact said that, then we're disappointed. And problems come into our mind, and one of those problems is doubt. Remember last week when we said that the first level of understanding for a Christian is to understand our real need, not just the needs that we sometimes think we have, but we really need to understand what our true needs are. Then this type of doubt that we're talking about tonight comes from the next level. And that is, as we go about trying to satisfy those needs, we're trying to find something or someone that will handle those needs in our life. And we have to ask two basic questions of every possible solution to our needs. And the first one is, does it really provide the answer to my needs? And the second one is, how can I know if it's true or not? Because it's very possible to manufacture something that you think is going to take care of your needs when in fact it doesn't. Or maybe manufacture someone that you think is going to meet your needs when in fact they don't. There have been lots of folks who got married and found that to be true. They thought that this person was going to just meet every need that they could possibly ever have. And whenever that didn't turn out like they thought it would, when that person wasn't who they thought that they were, then they began to have difficulties in that relationship. Your faith depends upon how well you answer those two questions. And in order to truly trust God, you've got to know full well that God satisfies both of those questions. Does He really provide the solution to the problems in your life? And do you know without any doubt whatsoever that God is real and true? And when you know those two things, you have a foundation for a faith that will take you all the way to the end of your life. But if you don't answer those questions, or if they're inadequately answered, then your faith is going to be anemic at best. And you're going to always wonder if maybe this faith system that you've been taught is manufactured. And is it real? Is it true? Does it really handle the problems in life? And if you leave those, either one of those, shrouded in uncertainty, then you're never going to be able to develop a level of true, absolute trust in God. Here's the key to Abraham's life, Romans chapter 4. If you would, turn there with me, and we'll quickly go through Romans chapter 4, beginning in verse 18. And while you're turning there, there's a statement, Romans chapter 3, verse 28, that's the conclusion of everything up to that point. It says, we maintain that a man is justified by faith apart from observing law. And then he uses in chapter 4, the entire chapter 4 is using Abraham as an illustration of that one statement right there. And when we get near the end of chapter 4, he's going to summarize Abraham's life. And this is what he says, picking up in verse 18. Against all hope, Abraham in hope believed. Now you need to stop and think about that for a little while. He's saying Abraham believed when there didn't seem to be any physical reason to believe. He believed beyond all human reasoning. He trusted God in areas that could not be understood. God made certain statements to Abraham that there was no way that he could believe that by human reasoning. The first one was, you're going to have a son. And when that finally came about and when God reiterated that to him, it was not physically possible for that to happen for either he or his wife. It couldn't happen. But it says he did not waver in unbelief. And then a little bit later, a few years later, he called him to take that son that God had said, okay, this is going to be the boy through whom I'm going to fulfill all the promises that I've given to you. I'm going to make you a father of many nations. All nations of the earth are going to be blessed through your seed. And there's only one seed now. And that was a miraculous seed, this boy that he had. And now God will say, take that boy, take him to a place I'll show you, put him on an altar, and take his life. And he did. Now the fact that God stayed his hand didn't detract from the reality of the fact that he did it. He did it. And Hebrews chapter 11 says that he reasoned to the point that if he took this boy's life, that God was going to bring him back to life. Now that is having hope against all hope, beyond reason. That's trusting God when nobody else around you can possibly bring themselves to trust God. And that's what God wants to develop in us. And we make a mistake when we put Abraham's faith up there on a pedestal somewhere we content ourselves by saying, I could never have faith like that. Well, you better have faith like that. And if you don't, you better be working toward having faith like that, because that's the kind of faith that God says that when he sees that kind of faith, he imputes that as righteousness to you. When you trust God to that level, that you don't reject what God has to say to you or what he commands you because your reasoning can't handle it, when you get past that so that you say, if God said it, I'm going to do it, or I'm going to die trying. That's where God wants you to be, and that's what we are doing here. We're developing in one another that faith. We're encouraging one another to that level of trust in God. And doubt is on the way to that. You have to handle doubt, and you have to handle it honestly. You can't play with it. You can't ignore it. Because if you ignore it, your faith will never develop to that point. And you've got to pray and work and study so that you get to that point. Now, let me just quickly give you a couple of illustrations about this kind of doubt. This doubt that comes from an improper view of God. If you believe that God has promised to make you happy in the sense that we use the word happy in our world today, then you're going to have some doubts about God because you're not always going to be happy that way. And we talked this morning about a prophet that God called. And as far as I know, he had a pretty good life. And he said, go marry a prostitute. And then he had these children, and he named them some really, really rough names. And this woman went out and was unfaithful to him. And he sent his children to try to persuade their mother to come home, and she wouldn't come home. How could you be happy in a situation like that? And God put him in that situation. We have been talking this past quarter in Nathan's class about, will God hurt you? I mean, that came up several times in class, didn't it? And some of us can't get our mind around that. But God has certainly hurt people in the past, hasn't he? In fact, he has killed people, has he not? Flood, who brought it? God did, didn't he? God did. You see, if you can't get your mind around that, and if you can't get your mind around touching the Ark of the Covenant and God striking you dead on the spot, if you can't get your mind around that, then you're going to have some problems with God. And we've got to be able to get our mind around who God is and let God be who he is. And if you were taught all your life that God would protect a Christian from harm, then what's going to happen to you when your child dies or is killed in an accident? What's going to happen to your faith? Did God ever promise you that he was not going to let any difficulty come into your life? Or that he wasn't going to allow someone to die in your family? Did he ever promise you that? But you see, if somehow we allow ourselves to believe those things, or that God always delivers his children from harsh treatment, God will not allow you to be tempted above that which you're able. And when we quote that, we're thinking in our mind, when I'm in trouble, God's going to reach down and pick me up and set me up on a rock where I'm not in that situation anymore. But we didn't read the last part of that verse. There's the last part of that verse that teaches us how he's not going to allow us to be tempted above that which we're able, but will with every temptation provide a way of escape that you may be able to bear up under the load. He'll strengthen your back. He didn't say he'd get you out of the tough situation. He said he would provide enough strength that it wouldn't break your back, that you couldn't bear it. And that's the promise. And so when we get realistic about what God's promised, then this avenue of doubt goes out the window. When we get an accurate picture of God and who he is and what he's promised and what he's done and what he says, then we're eliminating this source of doubt. And so these doubts, as a result of our misconceptions about God, should not be a problem for us. As we go back and we study about God and we don't ignore what we read, but we let that soak into our thinking and we expand our understanding enough to be able to accept those things, even some things that we don't particularly like. You know, I met a man, some of you may remember this name. His name is Godfrey Reichel. And I met him under a really strange circumstance because he and a friend of mine, Brother Alton Howard, I met both of them together in a situation one time. And both of them were in World War II, and Alton Howard flew in a bomber that bombed Luxembourg, Germany. Godfrey Reichel was a teenage boy in Luxembourg. He wasn't a Christian at that time. And when those two met later after the war and they shared their stories with one another, it took their breath away. Because all of a sudden, Alton began to think, what if I dropped a bomb on this boy and it killed this boy? He was about 15 years old. What if I dropped a bomb on his house and it had killed him? And he'd have never had an opportunity to become a Christian. And so those two became good friends over the years. But I remember Godfrey Reichel getting up and talking about growing up as a boy in Germany during the war. And he lived, his house faced the city square, an open square there in Luxembourg. And he told about waking up one morning. And by the way, it came as a shock to me as a young man. I heard him when I was about 21 years old. It came as a shock to me that they believed that God was on their side. He grew up believing as a German that God was on Germany's side. And I thought, how in the world could somebody believe that, you know? And he was thinking about Americans, how in the world could somebody believe that God was on their side? And it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And he told about waking up one morning and looking out his window and seeing Allied tanks in the square. And he said, at that moment, I decided there is no God. Why? Because God was on their side and he wouldn't let that happen to them. You understand the problem now? If you have a level of expectation of God that's not real, then when things happen in your life, doubt comes. And it comes hard. And if you've been taught that for a long time, and your parents taught you that, and people that you love taught you that, then when it hits you, it'll take you out. And you can get to a point where you don't want to have anything to do with God. Because you not only don't like him, you don't think he tells the truth. Because you believe certain things about him that's not true. So, how do we handle this level of doubt? Well, I think it's pretty obvious, isn't it? We better get our nose in the book and learn about God, hadn't we? I mean, not just about the God that Mom and Daddy told me about and the preacher told me about. I better learn about God. And I'm going to make a little suggestion to you that the place that if you really want to learn about God, get your nose in the Old Testament. Because I maintain that you'll learn more about God in the Old Testament than you do the New Testament. More about God's character. That's just my opinion. The Bible doesn't say that. But I believe it pretty strongly. And we need to learn who God is, and then when we learn that, we need to let God be God. And we may have to work on liking God. Because we may find out some things about God that go against our sense of justice. But God is God, folks. There's an entire chapter in the book of Romans that talks about God's sovereignty. He has a right. He doesn't have to ask your permission, nor mine. He is God, and what he does is right. And we need to learn about God. And when we do that, we will erase this particular source of doubt. That's a real problem in many people's lives. If we can determine where our doubt comes from, we can figure out what to do about it. Some doubt comes because of a misconception about God. God is incredible in every way. God is a God of love, of mercy, of kindness, and long-suffering. But behold the goodness and the severity of God. Don't make a caricature out of your God. Don't make him be just what you like and what you want and create an idol out of God. Find out who God is and let God be God. Let's stand and sing.